Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. And oh boy, is it going to be mind power this morning. If you have wondered, could you win at a game of dice? What about blackjack? If there's a part of your spirit that just loves Las Vegas, Atlantic City, places where you can gamble, play, have fun, well, I think my guess is a gentleman that you are really going to enjoy. We're going to be talking about his book, Inner Vegas, Creating Miracles, Abundance, and Health. Joseph Gallenberger is with me today. Hi, Joseph.
Hi, how are you doing, Donna?
Well, I am doing magnificently, and I was so looking forward to this interview. I don't know many people that can claim the, say it's the road to fame, because I don't know that that's the point here, but it can really get with doing psychokinesis, which will abbreviate to PK. Now, I want people to know a little bit about you. You are a clinical psychologist. You have over 30 years of experience in that. You have really gotten involved with psychokinesis because you have enjoyed a wonderful association with the Monroe Institute, and you are a senior facilitator there. You have got a very successful NC2 program. You've got a home study course in manifestation, and you take groups of people. You actually have workshops that you do in Las Vegas to demonstrate PK. And I, when I found out about that, I said, oh, for heaven's sake, you mean they let you in the casinos? They actually let you teach there? And the answer is yes. Tell us, Joseph, when and where you became fascinated with cards and the game of chance.
Well, Donna, actually, in my family, we played lots of cards as a kid where cookies would be made in the kitchen and the smells would be wafting over the dining room table, and we'd have 12 relatives there with the kids sitting on your lap and teaching you how to play canasta, hearts, different games. So I liked games right from the beginning. And after I found out about psychokinesis, this ability to affect matter with your mind, I was pretty naturally attracted to use the gaming environment to see if I could prove that this was real and then become good at it.
Well, I think of so many movies that have been made, and some of them have been produced off the comic strips, the Marvel comic strips about the superheroes. We have somebody that can freeze things in midair. I forget what the guy's name is. We have had Superman. We have got Spider-Man. We have got all of these different people, including the wonderful adventurous souls that can manifest things with the mind, the power of the eye, all of this kind of stuff. I think everybody's been mesmerized with that. And science fiction often precedes our acceptance of certain levels of discovery in reality. The world of the imagination is a fascinating thing. But you have really actually gotten involved in showing the power of the mind. Now, so many of us have seen The Rainbow Man or Dustin Hoffman portrayed a savant that could work with numbers, and his brother was Tom Cruise was making money hand over fist. They walk out of the casino, they walk out wealthy because he has this phenomenal ability of working with numbers. But yours is a whole different application.
And that's right.
You started this, give us a little bit of your background with the Monroe Institute, because it is an incredible facility. One, it's gorgeous, but there's really some specific things that this is, Bob Monroe really wanted to develop here.
Yes, well, he was very inspired using sound to help people go into deep meditative states very quickly and easily without the need for any dogma or religious background to it. So people come from all over the world, and they're very welcome, whether they're atheist or Buddhist or Christian or what have you. And that attracted me a lot. And getting in touch with these very high energies within meditative state, for me, I began to wonder, how could you use that to improve things here in Earth life, if you will? And the idea of being able to affect matter with your mind, Bob Monroe was very interested in that. He encouraged me. So we had some experience there with healing, being able to take away somebody's headache with a touch, that type of thing, and also be able to influence dice to roll in patterns that you would like. So from there, I went to laboratories at universities, did more psychokinesis experiments, raising the height of a fountain, affecting computers, and it became unknown to me as a scientist that this was real, to thousands upon thousands to one by chance. And so Vegas became a great classroom for me because I know the dice would be neutral. Slot machines have little computers in them. And if I could do that influencing out there, I could pay my office staff at home to keep working while I was going out there learning this. And that's, in fact, what it is.
Well, you have some interesting experiences that you went through when you were younger. You had out-of-body experiences. And then when you were 21, you had a motorcycle accident, and there was this being of light who appeared to you and said that when you were out of the body, said you had to go back into the body. Tell us about that.
Well, it was a beautiful day like today, sunny, and a car hit me, sent me way up in the air in Washington, D.C., and when I landed, and as you said, I went out of body and went out of consciousness, so I could see my body squirming around in the street and three lanes of traffic coming, and I had total peace, like, oh, this will be interesting. But then, indeed, this energy appeared to me and telepathically said, you're going back. I argued a little, but quite quickly was back in, and it was not pleasant initially back there. Later, I came to understand that being was probably myself from about 5 years in the future. And nobody's more interested in your success than your own self in the future, I guess.
Now, for you, you had also a very special man, Father Sumoko,
okay,
who was really quite a man. He was a Catholic university professor, but he had spent, he was a Jesuit who had spent a lot of years in India. And as so many people who go to different countries do, they incorporate aspects of whatever culture they are involved with and that they have an empathy with. And he was really quite a disciplinarian, wasn't he?
Yes, he started a class with freshman philosophy students saying, 2,000-word essay, I think is how many words, tomorrow on why we are here. And he wouldn't take questions, who are we and where is here? So people had to struggle overnight to try to really think. But he took everybody out in the class for a meal during the semester to really probe their mind. When I was, after the motorcycle accident, I ended up in a body cast, and he came and taught me independent study about Eastern religions, which was a nice addition to the kinds of religious background I had already had. I had been raised Catholic, but this broadened my horizons a bit about what else other people think.
Now, you were in 1991, Monroe's Institute's first Lifeline program.
Okay.
What is the Lifeline program, and how did it have such a phenomenal effect on you and your evolving into working with PK?
Well, Monroe's Lifeline program is designed to help people who have dropped the physical body but are having a struggle making transition into spiritual life. So other traditions, shamanic traditions, etc., work with this as well. But it's kind of a soul rescue program. And as it turns out for me, a week after the first Lifeline that I participated in, my brother Pete committed suicide. So we put these resources to bear to track him on the other side and help him settle in after that traumatic event. That also stimulated me because Pete was a very good man. He was talented, responsible, handsome, hardworking. Why was he having such trouble getting abundance going in his life, in relationships and in finances, that led to the suicide? As I looked upon that, this whole area of manifestation, creating the reality you want, came to the fore of my interest to study, and found that the psychokinesis stuff, the healing energies as well, are parts of that same energy that we could use to create a really good life for ourselves. But we have to get over our blocks. So if we have a lack of deservingness or feelings of fear, we're going to spin our wheels.
These are points that I think any one of us can relate to. And I was thinking before we were chatting, before the show, I was thinking to myself some various things that I had basically forgotten. But I remember having attitudes about Las Vegas. I was born and raised in California, so Las Vegas was a wonderful spot. Californians can drive there in just a little bit of time. And I just thought it always had sort of a dark image in my mind. And my husband has often teased me. He said, why don't you go in and win $1 million? He said, ask him how you could do this. And I said, oh, for heaven's sake. He said, but Donna, there's no reason why you can't do it. And I just thought to myself, isn't that interesting? And up popped in my head a thought that gambling, using mind skills for gambling, is not something that I have ever been comfortable with. And I think it's indoctrination, because the universe doesn't care one way or the other. There are millions of people that do this. Of course, a lot of them end up being gambling addicts, but we're not talking about that. We are not talking about being excessive here. What we're talking about is understanding that there are things that we need to change in our thinking to get the results we want. So what would you say to someone like me that says, gee whiz, I've got this in my subconscious, it's there. How am I going to get this garbage out?
Well, it is a good point. A lot of people may have mixed feelings. What is really attractive to me out in Las Vegas is the feedback device on dice, for example, is nearly instant. Within seconds, you know whether you've been in the correct mindset, and I would say heart set. This is really about opening your heart and expanding that love energy and projecting it. The mind comes in handy to set an intention, such as to roll 9 9s in a row. But the heart is, and that energy is what delivers this. And so for me, it's a psychological conditioning to a more enlightened way to live. Because if you're grounded and expanded into spirit energy, feeling one with everybody, open-hearted, very grateful, joyous, you're likely to get rewarded in the next 2 or 3 seconds on the dice. If you go into greed, fear, ego, then you're going to be punished by losing. And so Vegas just intensifies things. If you have an attitude of, I'm going to go and I can afford to lose $50 a day, that's probably what will happen. And if you have an attitude that I'm a loser and I'm never lucky, that will be magnified there usually. But if you're open-hearted and grateful and in positive energy, you often get rewarded. So we do have people that go out and hit a nice jackpot. And as you said, for us, the money is pretty incidental. We use small amounts just so people pay attention and they learn these lessons with something real at stake, if you will. And so they learn how to be more abundant at home as well as just in Vegas.
There are some points that you bring out right at the beginning of your book, which I think is so important. And this is why scientists, I think, have such a difficult time replicating the same things over and over and over and over again. I mean, we have proven ad nauseum, as far as I'm concerned, that these abilities do exist. But we always have a new generation that says, I don't think so. This isn't logical. So they have to go through the nonsense all over again. But one of the points that you bring out, one of many, is that psychokinesis performance does not respond well to any pressure.
Yes.
Now, that is extremely important. In fact, when you started going to Las Vegas, doing your own testing, using yourself as a guinea pig, you really worked out some particulars, and you went by yourself. Your family didn't necessarily go with you because you were doing this to try to develop your own skills, and you learned some very significant points. What were some of those points?
Well, the central one was that for this to be positive and powerful and consistent, the heart energy or opening your heart seemed to be the most powerful thing you could do. It tended to melt what I call the dragons of fear, feelings of performance, feelings of responsibility, how much is too much, all of the kinds of chatter of the ego. If moving into a very deep heart space really helped with that. But I could still get triggered, you know, if I was successful and then I came into the casino next time and the crew said, oh, here comes Mr. Lucky, everybody bet big. It was kind of hard to not pay attention to that. And so being very much in a meditative state in your own space, so that much like the zone in sports, what other people say was not very much on your mind. You were focused on what you're going to do, and you're in this really nice place. We could call it the zone, just like sports. That's where the magic would be created.
Mm-hmm. It's a form of detachment, really. It's just there is this energy of it's so subtle. And there's no time or space in it, and when you're in it, you're just in it, and it's there. And when you're not, you know it. And one of the biggest things you said is when you're tired, you learned not to play because you didn't have the focus or the intent, and you'd always lose.
Yes, it was very hard to win from a tired place. You could move into a state of complete surrender and let the universe come and flow through you. But with tiredness, usually there's also some irritation and you know, basically your intuition and your spirit saying, take a rest. So it's not, if you push past that, it usually was not pretty. But if you respected that, regathered your energy and your good mood, then things were much more positive again. And again, I'd like to make the point, we were using Vegas as a classroom about life. And same thing is true in relationships and work and in healing. You've got to get into that positive energy, spiritually connected, grounded to the earth, set a really clear intent, but then be able to let go and let the heart energy move through that to be able to bring it in easily into your life.
One of the points that you bring out, another point I should say, is that you let go of fear. And you said that it was fun. You were to play. In other words, this was not something where you were going in and saying, I'm going to win a $10,000 jackpot, and boy, this is the way it is. That's just not where you were. There was a sense of joyfulness, and you were going to have fun. And there was, again, that detachment. And I liked what you said about Bob Monroe. He called this kind of work, engaging the body, mind, emotions, and spirit, patterning. And
yes,
he felt that when you were trying to bring something into play, it was a complex factor. And I think that's what frustrates so many people so many times, is they feel like they need to have an instantaneous happening. And sometimes it might take years for something to really flow around because not everything is in that harmonic state to come together with purpose. And it's a fascinating thing to me. When you were developing your PK, did you notice that this was an especially significant thing you had to be aware of? And why was it important to you to utilize the PK? What was the value of doing this as an exercise in Vegas?
Well, the value for me was to see indeed that we are creators of our reality individually, and as a group, we create the world's reality. and that we have great power to shift and change that to be much more positive than it usually is right now, both in our personal life, but then also as a community. And I felt that with all the challenges right now in the world, that this is a really important thing to understand the power and impact we potentially can have on what the reality is going to be that we live in. And so the psychokinesis you mentioned, you know, some patterns take years if you wanted a soulmate or the ideal job. And you need feedback. You need feedback sooner. And so the psychokinesis tasks, if metal bends in your hand or dice roll in patterns, it usually occurs a few minutes after you began the effort, and you can tell whether you are in the correct energy or not very quickly, and then learn to make modifications to get more and more powerful with it. And that will come in really handy if you're trying to improve your entire community on a big project that might take 2 years or what have you.
One of your dragons, I'll use your word that you referred to in the book, one of your dragons was responsibility, or responsibility. How was that a dragon for you, and what did you find you needed to do so that that dragon wasn't breathing fire?
Well, for me, the responsibility for other people is what I was referring to. The way I was raised and working as a therapist and a number of things, I adopted quite a bit of feeling of responsibility for how other people are doing, whether they are successful, they are happy, etc. And that's all to the good, but if it's a sense of over-responsibility, then that becomes a problem. So I needed to learn things like their pain is a gift they give themselves in order to learn if they were not having a good time. I could do what I could to arrange things so they might have better insight, better progress, but I have to let go of trying to drive their car, if you will. And when I let that go, mainly through this open-hearted gratitude that I mentioned and grounding very well to the earth energies, then they could do their thing, I could do mine, and I was much more powerful in the psychokinesis and healing and manifesting areas.
I wanted you to share your manifestation story. When you were thinking about your wife and how you would love to take her to Paris one day, and I think there's so many people that look at that, and they'll say, oh, wouldn't that be wonderful, but that's not going to happen for me. It can happen for someone else. Share your story, because I think it's delightful.
Well, this story occurs in a context of living kind of a yoga, of having very high heart-open energy, positive, appreciative view of the world, etc. And in that context, things tend to manifest easily. So in this situation, my wife had never been to Paris, and I love the city, and so I just had the thought, yeah, I'd like her to take her to Paris. And by the end of the day, I had an email from somebody saying, would you like to do a training in France? And my next thought was, sure, I'd like to do that, and I'd like to go over first class round trip for free, because that would be romantic. And by the end of the day, I had the tickets. When I put out something that I would like, I always say this or something even better, and better for me and everyone else. So this trip, in fact, resulted in 10 more workshops in Europe, including some very deep healing time with the German people, a time at the island of Cyprus where we had about 12, 13 nations showing up, and discussions about how meditation, maybe even the hemisync from Monroe, could be used to help solve some of the political crises over in the Cyprus area. So you like things to have an unexpectedly positive result, but it can come quite quickly if you're in good space.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And you say in your book, the PK dragons, and you said you had many of them to fight.
Yes.
And that they were quieted, and I'll use your words from your book, by the miracle of an open heart.
Yes.
Describe the open heart.
I used to say, I meet courage with fear, that kind of approach, you know, like in battle.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, I now say I melt fear with love. My favorite saying that somebody actually, I said it and somebody put on a sign for me, so it's on my wall, is fear is expensive, love is priceless, choose wisely. And
ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
Fear is expensive, love is priceless, choose wisely.
Yes, choose wisely. So it's a constant choosing to be in the heart. And then, for example, one day I was in the casino and all I wanted to do is relax. I taught an 18-hour day. And I was hiding, and some of the group found me. And just as I sat down to get my intention, which was a royal flush in hearts, which is 160,000 by one, I had that split second, and I opened my heart to them and said, sure, join me. And even though I was tired, changed my attitude instantly to have pleasure in their company, and the third pull was the royal flush in hearts, which was nice. $5 bet paid about $4,500.
Fabulous. Now, let's talk about the game. And also, you give information in the book about casino rates. And I was amazed when you were able to rent a room. The people in the casino knew about your class.
Yes.
And you were able to have this class, and then the class went out. Tell us what that first experience was like. How big a group did you have the first time?
It's been pretty steady all along at 18 people, because that's how many people can fit around a dice table, and
mm-hmm.
we get our own tables reserved just for us. So we're all at the same table, if you will. So that dice table becomes our feast table. And so we had 18, and I'd been going to, this was at the Sahara, I'd been going there for many, many years by myself, so the crews knew me. And I arranged to have room rates and table times and such. But going out the first time, I was quite nervous. What the heck am I doing? And we had a fabulous time. Lori Monroe, Bob's daughter, joined us. And we did very well for the first three workshops over at the Sahara. And then they asked us to go somewhere else. They were a little tired of it. But we did things like raise $2,500 in tips in the first session. I remember that for the crew, because we were hitting the numbers exactly the way we wanted, and we put them on with us. So hey, we had a lot of fun in that first one, and right after that, I thought this is very positive for people, and I'd like to do more. And at this point, we've done 65 workshops out in Vegas called Inner Vegas Adventures.
Amazing. Now, you make a comment about how women have an easier time of letting go and surrendering. Why is that so important?
Well, again, this is a very broad generalization, but in general, at the beginning with things like bending metal or what have you, guys are trying a little too hard. Remember, we talked about being easy before and letting it flow. So women often are the first to do it, and the guys get inspired seeing that. And when they come in, they tend to be very precise, like nine nines in a row. I think that letting go is so important, and as well as having the intention. But the intention to do something, to go to Paris, whatever it is, that can be easier than just letting go and trusting it to come to you. And women do tend to have a little easier time with that in general. But guys can learn it pretty quickly once they see it work.
You had a participant that you met, and this fellow had been gaming successfully for a long period, and he won a major jackpot in slots on every birthday for 6 years.
Yeah.
And he sent a copy of a check that he won that was over $155,000. He used dowsing rods. Now, how in the world can a dowsing rod help you when you're working with a slot machine?
Well, if you don't have the energy, you might as well leave the rods home. But he was a very high-energy guy, so he would use dowsing rods to focus his intuition. He would put out a piece of adding machine tape paper on the floor and say, today, how strong will be psychokinesis for me, or PK? And he he'd have 0 to 100% on the piece of paper, and he'd walk the paper until the rods crossed. He'd look down, and if it said 80%, 90% or better, then he'd walk another piece of paper that said what time of day will be best. So say he got noon, then he would go to the casino at noon at that time. And he, in fact, won, I think, 5 out of the last 6 jackpots at the exact moment he predicted by the dowsing.
Amazing. And now all of this is in your book, Inner Vegas, and so much more. And my goodness, we're out of time. It's hard for me to believe that. Joseph Gallenberger, your book, Inner Vegas, Creating Miracles, Abundance, and Health, is an amazing read. And I know people can go to innervegas.com and find out more about this wonderful book. You've got all kinds of tips. You give the logistics of numbers and go into all kinds of stuff. And I think that this is not only fun to read, but it also makes people aware that they have just as much of an opportunity as the next person.
Yes,
and
right.
They can implement these different things. Also, you're associated with the Monroe Institute. You give tours. Will they find out about these tours with innervegas.com when they go there?
Yes. If they go to innervegas.com, that's a one page of the general website, which is called Sync Creation for HemiSync, and that will give you an idea of the workshops in Vegas, of the kinds of activities in the home study available, the Think Creation Home Study, and also the book covers, as well as there, this Manifestation and Creation Squared program that is up at Monroe Institute that I developed. So it's a good place to start. We'll give lots of information about this area if you're interested in healing, energy healing, manifestation, or PK.
Well, all of that and so much more. The book, Inner Vegas, is amazing to read. And who knows, maybe you'll be the next person that will be able to walk into a casino or play a game of some kind and test it out for yourself. Wouldn't that be fun? Again, I want to thank you so much, Joseph, for being with me. Joseph Gallenberger, PhD, Inner Vegas, Creating Miracles, Abundance, and Health. Go to innervegas.com. Donna Siebel here. We are taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Thank you, Donna. Take care.
You're welcome.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. They will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Siebel, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a product or service that you would like people to know about? Internet radio is a powerful medium that can assist you in reaching people who like to shop online and pass by electronic word of mouth information about you, your products, and or services. The Donna Siebel Show reaches around the world, and you can be part of that enterprising network. For more information, contact Vision Broadcasting via donna@delphiinternational.com
or call 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I would be delighted to do so. Here is the toll-free number, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. All I need from you is your first name or your initial. And of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from. So sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that crosses your mind. 888-627-6008. Tomorrow, we are going to be talking about the lost history of the little people. Susan Martinez has done an amazing job with archaeological discoveries, all kinds of information about little people. Now, these people, they are documented. Their little skeletons are being found. They are not misfits. They are people that actually lived tens of thousands of years ago. The story is incredible. Her research is amazing. And my goodness, we just keep learning more and more and more because we have the opportunity with technology to make assessments, to find out about things that before we really couldn't do very well. We're able to research DNA, so much more. So this is really going to be a fascinating subject, and I hope that you will join me. Made in the USA. Oh, my goodness. Do you know the Bureau of Labor Statistics say that American manufacturing lost 6 million jobs approximately between 2000 and 2010. Is that a surprise to you? No, I don't think so. We've been hearing about that over and over and over again through the years, and the typical term is offshoring. Well, that came about partially because of the North American Free Trade Agreement that was done in 1994. However, what really caused this major shift was China's entry into the World Trade Organization in 2001. Now, Ron Hara is a man who is an associate professor of public policy at the Rochester Institute of Technology. And they do a lot of research. And part of his research was for over a decade. And they saw these heavy job losses across more than a dozen different manufacturing sectors. What were those sectors? Well, apparel, textiles, electrical equipment, iron and steel production, computers, glass, leather tanning, and finishing. And my husband was saying to me just the other day, you can't buy shoes made in America anymore. They just don't have shoe manufacturing. Well, a lot of things came up in the time frames that I mentioned where manufacturers said, gee, I'm going to be able to do this for XYZ because competition is pretty stiff globally. So we all like to save our dollars, don't we? Places like Walmart really took off because they were buying literally billions of dollars worth of items, negotiating contracts. Whatever your feelings about Walmart might be, regardless of what they are, the public supported the business. Why? Because economically, it appealed very strongly, and it was something you saved money when you went there. It's still very, very important. Well, in 2010, compensation, wages and benefits for manufacturing jobs in the U.S. were about $34.74 per hour on average. That's lower than in 13 Northern and Western European countries, but far higher than costs in China. In China, at the time when they decided they were going to do this, it was $1.36 per hour in 2008, based on the research they did. India had an even lower hourly compensation cost than China. And I think most of us are aware that many of the third world countries, people work, they get pennies a day. They don't get dollars a day. They get pennies a day. If they make $1,500 a year, they're considered wealthy. It's an amazing situation when you think about it. However, you have to break down costs. You have to look at how labor accounts for only a small fraction of operating costs. So China put out this wonderful manufacturing goodie package. That's how he described it. They offered tax breaks, low-cost land rental, reduced utility costs, and this went on, and they just offered all kinds of yum-yums to the business community. However, that's changing in China. And where we had such a shifting of people leaving the U.S., what they found was they, one, couldn't control the quality. They were not able to get past many corruptive practices. Two, they had the cost of building plants. They had to look at if they sent something over to the United States and it wasn't up to snuff, they would have all of that loss because the customers were sending stuff back. They'd say, your quality just isn't there. The Chinese wages, they see rising to $6.15 an hour. It's well below what the U.S. minimum wage is. But American productivity is significantly higher. And now they are finding, they're finally waking up to the reality. The true cost of manufacturing goods from China will be significantly less in the positioning of being an advantage in just a few years. And that is because the Chinese people, one, they've become more literate. Two, they are embracing the idea that they want to have choices and they want to make a good living. So because of their education, their exposure to the Western environment, being aware of what can happen, then by golly, they're demanding. Sound a little familiar? I think we went through the same thing here in the United States. Also, a lot of manufacturing companies are very concerned about national security issues and the supply chain in dealing with India and China and even some other countries around the world presents some real challenges. Just think of what happened in China, in Japan, when they had the tsunami. Those poor people, everything was disrupted. And how they were able to turn it around, they were such an efficient people, just wonderful people. Mother Nature really slammed them hard. They're still dealing with the nuclear issue that was so disruptive and still is. Now, over Japan, well, the U.S. is going to have a big advantage, especially when it comes to electricity, natural gas, and labor. So the anticipation is, because of the shift, and it's all basic economics, it looks like the U.S. will be adding 2.5 to 5 million manufacturing jobs by the end of the decade. Now, what does that mean? What kind of jobs would be out there? Well, blue-collar jobs. One of the things that's not been encouraged for a number of years in this country is educating people to become plumbers, welders, people that can deal, carpenters. We need to have younger generations that really would enjoy this kind of work trained. We've got to have them trained, and they need to go to school for this because we're dealing with computers to a great degree. So lots of times, younger people, they may think they've got to go to college, but maybe they need to go to a technical college. They are going to be paid phenomenal sums. Mechanics, we need them. But they have to be educated, again, with computers. They need to have this understanding. So for those of them, or for those of you that maybe are wondering about a career shift, don't turn your nose up at blue-collar jobs. They're needed. Now, a lot of robotics are being introduced. A lot of technology is being introduced, but you're needed. Remember, repair work is needed. We have to have people that have to know how to fix clothes, how to make shoes, all kinds of things. And it used to be in the United States, we were almost totally self-sufficient because of the skill and talent level. Well, we can still do it, but we need to be aware. We need to be aware that there needs to be, in my personal opinion, a demand for excellence of product and supplies from other countries, just like we demand it of our own manufacturing facilities. So I think that this is something that is going to be evolving, and I think that Americans are going to say, we're ready to make the shift, and there's so much possibility out there. So if you know of a kid that's really good at working with their hands, has a knack for landscaping or dealing with the basics of life, encourage them to go to school and get those fine levels of education. They don't necessarily have to get a PhD in psychology. There may not be enough jobs for that going around, but they might be able to when it comes to knowing how to build a deck, remodel a home, take care of working with glass, putting it into high-rise buildings. All of these jobs are so very, very important. And if you don't think so, you tell me who you call when the power goes out. Well, we've got a lot of people that may be retiring from those professions that are now in their 60s, some in their 70s. And if their knowledge isn't passed on, we're going to lose out on all of that. Well, that's just a little bit that I wanted to share with you today. This is Donna Sebo, 888-627-6008. If you'd like to give me a call, I'd love to chat with you and light up your life with a little bit of insight. Hey, I have got some raspberry cupcakes with key lime frosting. Mm-hmm. Key lime and raspberry, oh, is it good. I'll share that with you when I come back, and some other good things, too, so don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
If you are an author and would like to be a guest on the Donna Sebo Show, please send a review copy of your publication along with a press release to the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. Allow 6 to 8 weeks for your material to be reviewed. Again, the address to send your material to is the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. If you're like me and you have a sweet tooth and you like to bake, I do like to bake. It's a good thing I don't bake as much as I enjoy doing it. I probably couldn't get out my front door because I'm one of these people, I like to taste what I cook. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'd be one of those round Italian mamas that you so often see portrayed as never getting out of the kitchen. I had an Ancho Sassino who I loved dearly, and she was about my height, and she was as round as she was tall. Well, once she found out that that wasn't a good health situation and she trimmed down substantially, nobody ever was able to enjoy the sumptuous meal she fixed before. Her sons and her husband really missed that. I think she had 5 boys. Well, anyway, I wanted to share this with you because it is different. And I think lots of times we want something that is unique, but, oh, man, is it going to be satisfying to the taste buds. So this is what you're going to do. I'm going to give you the cupcake portion and then the frosting. But to make your cupcakes, this is going to be done from scratch. All the ingredients need to be at room temperature, and your oven needs to be heated to 350 degrees. Now, this is going to make about 20 cupcakes. And, you know, if you wanted to make half, that's fine. But, again, let's just go with the recipe as it is. 3 cups of unbleached all-purpose flour. You want to do that. And you need a tablespoon of baking powder, 1 teaspoon of salt, 2 cups of sugar, 1 cup of butter. And, again, remember, the butter has to, everything has to be at room temperature. 3 eggs, 1 egg white, 2 teaspoons of vanilla extract, 1 cup of milk, and 1 cup of fresh raspberries, and you're going to smash those just barely. Now, for the frosting, this is the frosting portion. You're going to need 8 ounces of cream cheese, room temperature, 1/2 cup of butter, room temperature, 1 tablespoon of grated key lime zest, 2 tablespoons of key lime juice, and you can buy that at the store if you want, and 5 cups of confectionery sugar that is sifted. So here we go with the cupcakes. You can line your muffin cups with muffin cake liners, which is really a good thing. It helps clean up. Now, your flour, baking powder, and salt, just whisk that together real quickly. Put that to the side. On medium speed, you want to beat your sugar and butter until it's fluffy. Just put it in the mixer. Let the mixer just beat it with its paddle, and then scrape it down and let it beat some more until it's really light and fluffy. An extra fine sugar is wonderful to use with this, but regular granulated is just great. Once it's nice and light and fluffy, then you're going to add your eggs and your egg white one at a time until it's well incorporated. Then you want to put your vanilla in. Then on that low speed, you want to beat in a third of the flour mixture, add half of your milk, you blend, and once that's blended nicely, you do the second third of flour, remaining milk, mixing until blended. Then you add the remaining flour, mix until it's just combined. You don't overbeat this. Then you fold in your raspberries just to combine. Again, you don't beat it in. You gently fold it in. Then you divide your batter among your cupcake liners. Bake them for 20, 24 minutes or until they're light and golden. And don't do what I did the other day. Do you have a preheat mechanism on your stove? I do. And I have to mindfully pay attention to turning it to bake, because once the oven's preheated, then I should turn it to bake, and I didn't do that. My muffins, I thought, were destroyed, but they weren't. They were just really a little bit darker than they should. They were still delicious, but I was just so upset with myself. So remember, if you have a preheat section on your oven, turn it to bake. Don't goof like I did. Now your frosting. This is so easy to do. A medium speed, your cream cheese and butter, you beat it until it's thoroughly combined and light. And then on low, you add your zest, your juice, slowly add it until it's all combined. Medium, beat it until fluffy. Add your confectionery sugar. And, oh, my goodness, it is so good. Just the contrast of flavors. Yum. Delicious. And if you wanted to add a little bit of something to it, you might want to add some walnuts or maybe a little bit of crushed almonds. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. I like food. I know you could never know that, would you? Anyway, I had some other information I wanted to share with you about a vanishing serpent and a buggy situation. But, hey, I think I'm going to have to save that for you later on. Don't forget, tomorrow you are going to find out about the lost history of the little people. Elves? Trolls? Dwarfs? Well, maybe a little bit about that, but a lot more. And guess what? They were all around the world. Fascinating history. I think you will really enjoy it. This is Donna Siebel. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life is such a wonderful experience. And like my guest today, Joseph, the dice can be rolled, but how much do you want to be able to affect them turning up with what you want in life? Well, that takes a mindfulness. That takes an awareness. And just like he said, you let go, you let things be, and you can be amazed at the results that you'll get. So this day, go around with a feeling of joy. Count your blessings. There's so much to be grateful for in this experience of life. If you're going through hard times, all right, we all have them. But realize this too shall pass. This is your day. This is your day to smile, light up the life of the people around you by being the best you can be. And be grateful, because there is a lot to be grateful for. God bless. Have a wonderful day or evening wherever you are on this magnificent planet of ours. We'll be chatting tomorrow. Won't you join me? I'd love to have you do that. This is Donna Siebel. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.